This is Dana Monsees, the nutritionist and Whole30 certified coach behind Real Food with Dana, and you're listening to the Real Talk with Dana podcast. What's up? It is time for another episode of Real Talk with Dana. What's new with you guys? Anything fun? Let's see what's new with me this week. Well, I've obviously been obsessed with watching as much of the Olympics as possible. Obviously, who isn't? This weekend, I did Cupid's Undie Run on Saturday in DC to raise money for the Children's Tumor Foundation and ran around in the freezing rain in my underwear. Yes, that is a thing. More relevant to our topic today, so I took my dog to the vet earlier this week, and apparently she has a parasite, so that's fun. So after already spending a bunch of money on vaccines and vet visits and her heart guard and flea and tick stuff, I get to go back today to pick up a little prescription for her to get rid of a parasite, so that's fun. Don't worry, she'll be fine. I just get to go spend a bunch more money today. Awesome. Which is actually super appropriate and timely because today's episode is all about gut health. So we're going to talk about leaky gut, which is also known as intestinal permeability, how that relates to autoimmune disease and the gut microbiome, lots of fun stuff. So more specifically, we're going to dive into what is leaky gut, how do you get it, how do you heal, and what the heck is going on in your body when you do have intestinal permeability. We're going to talk about the whole nine yards today. We're also going to cover collagen, gelatin, bone broth, answer your guys' questions about that too, because you apparently had a lot of them. And P.S., just so you know up front, I do have a ton of recipes on the blog that use broth and collagen and gelatin, so I'm definitely going to link those in the show notes. But if you're impatient and you want to look up those recipes while you're listening to this podcast, more props for you. You can just go to the search bar on my website and type in gelatin or collagen or broth, and they're all delicious. I can promise you that. So two things before we get started today. If you are loving the podcast, which by the way, you guys, thank you for the awesome feedback on the adrenal fatigue episode last week. It was awesome. We're definitely going to turn that into a series and dive into that topic a lot more deeply, if that's a word. Yeah. Okay, good. Anyways, if you've been loving the podcast, please share it with a friend, a coworker, siblings, parents, on Facebook or Instagram, wherever your little heart desires. It means the world to me. You guys are the best. And now, because we're doing a little bit of a more sciencey episode today, don't worry, I'm going to break it down for you guys. I just want to do a little disclaimer here that all of this information is to be taken as general nutrition information only, and it's not to be substituted for the advice, diagnosis, or treatment of a medical doctor. Don't use me as your doctor or Dr. Google to diagnose yourself with leaky gut or anything else that we talk about on this podcast today. Go work with a naturopath, work with a nutritionist. Even though I am a nutritionist, I'm not working with you individually, so you can't take this as individual advice. So don't do that. Just not a good move. So go to somebody to figure out what's going on specifically in your case instead of just freaking out after you hear this podcast and then diagnosing yourself with something that a lot of people do with WebMD and Dr. Google. Okay, anyways, let's talk about the fun stuff. Let's get to the episode and the main topic of the day. Drum roll, please. You know, I really wish I could actually figure out how to insert a drum roll here. It's probably not that hard, but, you know, new to this whole podcasting thing. So, you may have heard a lot about leaky gut in the past couple of years. Along with adrenal fatigue, it's kind of become one of the latest health trends, along with the rise in gluten-free anything and everything, and gluten intolerance or non-celiac gluten sensitivity, which, yes, is a real thing. So get ready. Like last week, this is going to be a little bit more of a sciencey episode. We're going to dig into the science, but explain it in a very easy to understand way to explain what leaky gut, aka intestinal permeability, actually is, why it happens, and obviously how you can heal from it, because that's probably what all of you guys are here for. So we're also going to cover how to know if your gut actually needs a little bit of help. We're going to talk about the gut microbiome just a little bit, brushing the surface on that one. And we're going to talk all about probiotics, prebiotics, and antibiotics. Oh my, lions and tigers and bears. Anytime I say like three things in a row like that, I always think of the Wizard of Oz, lions, tigers, and bears. Don't mind me, it's fine. Okay, so what even is leaky gut in the first place? So in healthy people with a well-functioning gastrointestinal tract, aka your GI tract, the small intestine, which is actually your gut is not your stomach, so the small intestine functions as the main digestion, absorption, and immune modulating organ in the body. So the gut barrier that you may hear about that becomes leaky is actually known as the epithelium or the brush border. Basically, it's the barrier between the inside of your gut or your intestines and the rest of your body. And as Chris Kresser says, it serves as the gatekeeper that decides what gets into our body and what stays out. So the enzymes on this brush border in the small intestine allow for the breakdown and assimilation of nutrients, meaning how they get into our cells to be absorbed, and it allows friendly compounds like properly digested fats, proteins, and carbohydrates to pass through. And the epithelial, remember the gut barrier wall, keeps foreign invaders like pathogens, bacteria, and larger food particles out, basically shit that we don't want in the rest of our bodies. So I think you can see where the problem is going to start here. Now, the villi on the brush border look like millions of tiny little fingers squished really close together on the inside of your intestines. This is where all of those enzymes lie. So with leaky gut, the villi on the brush border begin to break down along with the structure of the epithelial wall, aka your gut barrier. So basically, all the little fingers that were so close together with barely any space in between, now there's a lot of space in between them if you have intestinal permeability. And it's not really so much a barrier anymore as a wall with a bunch of holes in it, which then allows these unwanted particles to pass through into the bloodstream. So normal stuff that isn't supposed to be in your bloodstream is now showing up there, and your body gets really confused. So similar to what happens in autoimmune disease, your body now thinks that there's a foreign invader in your bloodstream, even if what got through isn't a parasite or bad bacteria or something, which then sets off your body's immune response to get rid of that invader. So even if what got through was something mundane, like carrots that haven't been all the way broken down, the body attacks because it thinks shit that isn't supposed to be in your body is getting in there. And like, whenever I think of this, I always think of Gandalf from Lord of the Rings being like, "You shall not pass." But in this case, a lot of things are getting passed that aren't supposed to be. So this, when stuff gets through, causes widespread inflammation because it's not like your blood just stays in one place, obviously. So the inflammation response can also cause foods that had already been digested to be malabsorbed, which then leads to micronutrient deficiencies, which sucks because then even if you're eating healthy food all the time, lots of vegetables, proteins, and healthy fats, if you don't actually digest and absorb that food, you're not going to get the full amount of the nutrients those foods provide, which can then lead to deficiencies in your body and corresponding health problems from those deficiencies. Normally, the microvilli, remember the little fingers on your brush border, aka the intestinal wall. So normally the microvilli release enzymes called lactase, which breaks down the lactose found in dairy products, and something called CCK, or cholecystokinin, which signals to your pancreas to give out various digestive enzymes that help you break down your food. So when your gut barrier breaks down, we're already having trouble breaking down foods as it is since the villi are farther apart. But now since the other parts of your body, which are supposed to send digestive enzymes to help break down the food that's in the small intestine, aren't doing their job either, problems are coming. So as you can see, digestion and absorption is becoming a major problem here. So back it up here. How does your gut become leaky in the first place? I guess we should talk about that too. So gluten sensitivity, food intolerances and allergies seem to be skyrocketing these days. And with them, we're seeing a lot more GI and autoimmune disorders. And a huge rise in all of the things gluten-free. Just look on any store shelf. You know this. So even for people who don't have celiac disease, the proteins gluten and gliadin can actually cause an inflammatory response in the small intestine and can help lead to leaky gut. But here's the catch now. So some of the gluten-free products on the shelves can be inflammatory too. So even if you're trying to switch from like regular gluten-filled bread and pastas and cookies and all that stuff to go gluten-free, the stuff that is used in these new gluten-free products that are a bunch of like chickpea or garbanzo bean flours or like every single corn product under the sun or like soy, those can also be inflammatory to the body because our bodies don't exactly have a fun time breaking those down. So those can actually contribute to a leaky gut too. So when the body attempts to fight off what it thinks is a foreign invader, so for example, whether it's gliadin or gluten, another food you have a sensitivity to, or just one that got through your gut barrier due to leaky gut, it creates an antibody response similar to an autoimmune reaction, which enlarges the blood vessels in the gut so that more white blood cells and other immunoglobulins, aka molecules that fight off infections, can rush to the scene. They're probably not running in your body, let's be real. This makes the gut more permeable or leaky to allow these immune modulators to get to the scene of the inflammation. So basically, as you can tell, it's pretty much a vicious cycle. Once you have a little bit of leaky gut, if you don't do anything to fix that immediately, which almost no one can tell when you have a leaky gut in the short term, it's going to keep getting leakier and leakier if you don't get to the root cause. So the good news is the epithelial or gut lining can regenerate fairly quickly. So if you have this initial stimulus that creates a little bit of leaky gut, within a day, the immune response has died down and the gut begins to heal itself. So as long as these inflammatory modulators, whether it's gliadin or gluten or any of these inflammatory things are out of the system, your body can heal itself again. But once another gluten-containing or other offending food is eaten, the entire inflammatory response begins all over again. Except this time, your body has already made autoantibodies to that food, no matter what it is. So the anti-inflammatory reaction is even stronger and more damaging to the gut wall. So as I said before, this leads to a vicious cycle of never really letting the gut heal before hammering it again with more inflammation, which can cause a basically shit storm of negative health consequences that can go far beyond the gut, which sucks. And this is why leaky gut, the symptoms of it are so widespread throughout the body. So the integrity or the tightness or how close together the little fingers called villi are pushed together of the gut lining is maintained by what are called tight junctions between your gut cells that are called desmosomes. So when the gut becomes more permeable, again, due to the gliadin or gluten exposure, inflammatory foods, toxins, or chronic stress, the junctions loosen up, which allows larger molecules to pass through, like undigested food, foreign particles, bacteria, toxins, waste products, and more gross stuff. So basically, when you have intestinal permeability, again, also called leaky gut, the shit that is supposed to stay in your gut gets into the rest of your body and your brain is like, whoa, no, this is not supposed to be here, aka you can't sit with us. So your liver then gets involved to try and filter these perceived toxins and foreign invaders out. Then the immune system wakes up and is like, oh, hell no. So it brings all the troops to destroy what is getting through. But usually there's too much stuff for the system to handle and get rid of. So the foreign bodies get absorbed all over the place, causing tissues in many different parts of your body to become inflamed. Cue the shitstorm of inflammation. So one, as we've said, of the most powerful triggers that, again, opens up these tight junctions and causes your gut to be a little bit more permeable is the ingestion of gluten, even for people who don't have celiac disease. So gluten and gliadin, which is another protein, not only run down the villi in the small intestine with repeated exposure, which can then lead to malabsorption, nutrient deficiencies, and indigestion, but they also trigger the opening of these tight junctions, allowing the foreign particles to pass through and creating a continuing inflammatory response in the body. As time goes on and the gut lining is continually exposed to these proteins and other substances are allowed to pass through the intestinal lining, the more food sensitivities you will develop. Even if you didn't previously have sensitivities to those foods, once they pass through the gut wall and enter the bloodstream, the body makes antibodies to them. So just like with gluten or a gliadin exposure, the next time you eat that food, the body already has antibodies against it, which then triggers the immune system and mounts an inflammatory response, even to mundane foods like carrots, potatoes, blueberries, anything like that. Next week, I'm actually going to do a whole episode on food sensitivities and allergies and intolerances, but just keep in mind, this is how they normally start. So now let's talk about how lifestyle factors, not just food, can contribute to leaky gut. Because there are a lot of other things besides an inflammatory diet that can further increase gut permeability, which can contribute to the development of a leaky gut, such as other food sensitivities, chronic stress, overuse of NSAIDs, which are painkillers and anti-inflammatories, antibiotics or proton pump inhibitors, which are prescribed to treat acid reflux or heartburn, high-intensity exercise, infections, lectins, low stomach acid, toxic exposure, parasites and yeast infections, overconsumption of alcohol, and just immune overload. So yikes, right? Those are a lot of things that all of us are probably guilty of, at least one or two, like maybe even six of them at some point, maybe not all of them. So another thing that can contribute to leaky gut, which we probably all do or all have done at some point, is not chewing your food well enough, eating while you're stressed, standing up or in your car, and inadequate stomach acid, which is called HCl or hydrochloric acid, which is the stuff in your stomach that helps break down proteins and which puts a strain on the enzymatic functions of the small intestine, which becomes more problematic as the gut becomes leakier and these particles are allowed to pass through the gut wall. So a poor diet, obviously, like following the standard American diet with all the refined flours and sugars and crappy oils, has been shown in the research to cause undesirable changes in the gut microbiota, which makes the gut barrier more permeable. Now, if you're listening to this podcast, you probably don't eat the standard American diet. Hey, maybe you do. But now at least you know that this is one of the things that you could be doing to your body if you do. But the thing is, even if you eat a healthy diet, you can still get leaky gut, so don't tune out here. Okay, just to recap, because I know that was a lot of information. A bunch of the big things that can cause or contribute to leaky gut or intestinal permeability, which again are the same thing. So poor diet, chronic stress, inflammation, medications and antibiotics, an imbalance of gut bacteria, a bacterial or yeast overgrowth, overload of toxins in your system, which can come from house cleaning products or personal care products, even a few nutrient deficiencies like glutamine and zinc, which are essential pieces in keeping a strong gut wall, all of these things can contribute to getting a leaky gut. So now let's talk about, okay, so now you think you have leaky gut. What actually happens to the body as a result of intestinal permeability? So unfortunately, these effects can be totally widespread throughout the body and affect not only the GI tract from your mouth to your exit end, but they can also create an immune response that affects the skeletal system, the brain via the enteric nervous system, which connects your digestive system to the brain, which is also called the gut-brain axis, the pancreas, your kidneys, and your liver. So intestinal permeability can also lead to a compromised immune system, lots of more inflammation, as we've talked about before, joint and arthritic pain, skin issues like eczema and acne, which are all affected by immune sensitivity reactions in the joints and the skin. While the immediate or short-term symptoms of leaky gut do begin in the gut, which results from a lack of digestive enzymes in the damaged villi, which can lead to malabsorption and nutrient deficiencies, bloating, gas, indigestion, abdominal pain, and IBS symptoms, lots of not-so-fun digestive symptoms, while the impact of zonulin, which is a chemical released by gluten and gliadin, opens up the tight junctions in the gut wall, which can then lead to the development of food sensitivities and allergies as foreign invaders get into the bloodstream that aren't supposed to be there. Remember Gandalf. So this can also lead to dysbiosis, which is upsetting the balance of the microbiota in your gut. So hold your horses. We're going to talk a little bit more about the microbiome and microbiota in a second if you have no idea what I'm talking about here. So further, a leaky gut can not only cause what's called leaky skin, so inflammation in your skin, but also what people are now calling a leaky brain via the enteric nervous system and the vagus nerve, which can cause issues like depression, brain fog, anxiety, poor memory, and chronic fatigue. So all sucky things that we may be experiencing as a result of leaky gut, which can also lead to more severe conditions like autoimmune disease, chronic fatigue syndrome, celiac disease, fibromyalgia, IBD, kidney stones, MS, and psoriasis. So it can trigger them in genetically predisposed individuals, or it can make those conditions and flare-ups worse. Some researchers like Dr. Alessio Fasano, who is a leading researcher in autoimmunity, celiac disease, and non-celiac gluten sensitivity, basically he's like the OG of researchers on this kind of stuff. So they've been working on research for years that shows that leaky gut may actually be a precondition to autoimmunity, meaning almost everyone with an autoimmune condition has leaky gut to start with. Further, that the intestinal barrier operates as the biological door to inflammation, autoimmunity, and cancer. So basically they're saying that you won't develop an autoimmune condition without having a leaky gut first. In fact, a lot of autoimmune diseases like celiac, rheumatoid arthritis, Crohn's and colitis, MS, are all characterized by abnormally high levels of zonulin and a permeable gut barrier. If you hear this little noise in the background of sneezing and stuff, that would be my dog. Please don't slobber all over my stuff because apparently you can give me a parasite too. That's great. Okay, back to this intestinal permeability stuff. Let's talk a little bit about the gut microbiome because I know I glanced over that and you guys are probably like, what the heck is that? So, the microbiome. The 1,000-foot view of the gut microbiome is that it's the population of millions of bacteria that live in your gut that kind of act as a control center for a lot of your body's biological functions, like the immune function in your intestines, if we want to pick a super relevant example for what we're talking about today. It basically determines how well your body can fight off infection. It plays a huge role in how you digest and process food, in autoimmune disease, a bunch of that kind of stuff. And just FYI, in case you didn't know this, or just as a careful reminder, bacteria in itself is not bad. Just like inflammation is not inherently bad, it's your body's normal healthy response to keep you healthy and heal from injuries and sickness, okay? So there's a careful balance of bacteria in your microbiome that has to be maintained if you want to stay healthy. So the shit that messes up your gut and makes it leaky can also contribute to an imbalance of bacteria in the microbiome, which is even more of a shitstorm. Because even though we normally have a careful balance of bacteria like lactobacillus, which you've probably seen in your probiotics, of bifidobacteria, streptococcus, candida, and E. coli. Yes, I repeat, in a healthy gut, you do have candida and E. coli. Once those become out of balance, aka you have an overgrowth of candida or an overgrowth of E. coli or strep in comparison to the other good bacteria, that is when you start to see problems like bacterial infections, parasite infections, yeast infections, and general grossness. So if you have an overgrowth plus a leaky gut, you're pretty much screwed. The good news is there are a lot of things you can do about it, but it's not a good situation to be in. So the microbiome is why doctors and nutritionists recommend that we take both probiotic and prebiotic foods, as well as eat plenty of plant fibers and complex carbs, which are the fuel for the good bacteria. So while probiotics help you maintain the healthy balance of bacteria, prebiotics actually provide the food for those bacteria so they can continue to grow. A couple of things that can disrupt and throw off that balance are antibiotics, because think of the word, antibiotics means they kill bacteria. Infections, the use of toxic personal care and household products, which is basically like any conventional personal care and household products, medications, antacids, inflammatory foods, etc., etc., etc. Bonus points if you can name that movie. So if you think about candida, a yeast infection, SIBO, which is small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, or SIFO, which is small intestinal fungal overgrowth, these are really common disruptions in the microbiome. Just examples of that. So just like I said, all bacteria aren't bad. Inflammation is not inherently bad. Not all antibiotics are bad. They've saved probably millions of lives, and they've basically kept us alive as a species too. But the problem is we have now the overprescription and overuse of antibiotics for every little thing under the sun. I swear you sneeze and go into a doctor's office and they're like, oh, here's an antibiotic, which I'm not going to tell you is actually going to destroy all of your gut bacteria, and it won't come back unless you use probiotics. Okay, rant. Calm down. So specifically, broad spectrum antibiotics, these can wreak havoc on your gut. And unless you're super proactive about repopulating the healthy bacteria in your gut with probiotics during the time that you're taking the antibiotics and after you take the antibiotics, you're probably going to run into some gut health and compromised immune system issues. So someone, I think on Instagram, asked me about probiotics and whether you need to switch them up. And the answer is yes. About every 6 months is a general recommendation. You should switch up the strands of probiotics that you use just to make sure you're feeding all of the different types of good bacteria and to keep the bad ones down in the gut to keep you healthy. Okay, so round circle here. Time to go back to leaky gut. So how do you know if you have leaky gut? And how can you test for it? So obviously, besides having a bunch of the symptoms that we've already talked about, there are two main tests you can do to actually see if you have leaky gut. So you can do a zonulin test. Remember, that's the chemical that's responsible for the breaking apart of the tight junctions in your gut wall, or you can do a food sensitivities or intolerances test. So with the zonulin test, if your zonulin level is very high, it probably indicates that you have a very leaky gut. Because if you have a lot of it, that means all of that zonulin in your gut is breaking apart your tight junctions. But you can also have intestinal permeability even if the zonulin test doesn't come back super high. Now, for a food sensitivity test, an increase or the presence of a lot of food sensitivities or intolerances on an IgG or an IgA test is a big indicator of leaky gut, since food sensitivities can develop from increased intestinal permeability and can contribute to the continuing cycle of leaky gut if you don't take the steps to heal. So speaking of that, good transition here, let's talk about the natural ways that you can heal leaky gut. So first of all, yikes, take a step back. I know that was a lot of science. My brain needs a break, so you probably need a break too. And can you even believe the amount of damage that a leaky gut can do, or even all of the crazy different ways that it can happen? It's no wonder that so many people are dealing with leaky gut issues these days, because it's basically a shitstorm of a disease of modern lifestyle, kind of like adrenal fatigue. So what can we do about it? Especially since so many general practitioners will look at you like you have four heads if you ask about leaky gut. Or they might just laugh at you because now leaky gut is becoming a more common thing. But, you know, that's a nice thing to experience too if a doctor laughs at you. So, leaky gut is basically like the middleman in the cascade or shitstorm of inflammation that is going on here. So, something had to come to cause the intestinal permeability and the symptoms it leads to. So even if you get like diagnosed, or if you have an indication that you have leaky gut, you need to go deeper to see what the real root cause of the problem is and correct that, not just the symptoms of leaky gut themselves that you're experiencing. So for this, I highly, highly recommend working with a functional medicine doctor or a nutritionist to figure out the root cause of what is really going on here. To do lab work, supplements, all that good stuff, especially if you have an autoimmune disease like Hashimoto's. You really need to get some outside help here. But even before you do that, or while you're doing that, there are a couple of things that we can do to help heal up your leaky gut and support it during these times of inflammation and stress, like stressful deadlines at work, high intensity exercise, or chronic steady state cardio like training for a half or full marathon, not sleeping enough, having one too many drinks at the Super Bowl, or tonight for Valentine's Day. So one of the biggest changes you can make, and you're going to think this is silly, but it's seriously going to help your body break down food before it even gets to your leaky gut, is to chew your food. Don't wash it down with water. You would be surprised if you actually sit down to your next meal and you think about chewing your food 5, 10, 15 times before you actually swallow it, you will become so much more conscious of how most of us literally just take 2 bites of our food and then you'd swallow it down, wash it down with water without even chewing it. What do you think is going to happen to that undigested food when it gets to your gut, when you have holes in the walls of your gut? Right? Not going to do anything good. So don't eat standing up, don't eat in your car, or when you're stressed, because your body isn't ready to digest the food. If you're swallowing your food down without chewing it all the way, it's going to be much easier for those bigger particles to get through your leaky gut into your bloodstream and then cause inflammation. So another big change you can make is by obviously eliminating food that are causing inflammation to you. Gluten is a biggie, and if you're curious of other foods, the cheapest thing to do is an elimination diet, like the Whole30 is a good place to start, or the autoimmune protocol. So during your reintroduction process, you'll find out which foods your body doesn't like. Or if you want to go a more expensive route, you can try out a food sensitivities test through your doctor, and I'll be talking more about these next week. But be wary though. If a ton of foods come up on those food sensitivity tests, it probably means that you have a severe degree of intestinal permeability or leaky gut going on. But that does not mean that you are allergic to those foods and you have to avoid them forever. Did you hear me say that? I'm going to say it again because a lot of people get this wrong. If you get a food sensitivity or intolerances test and a bunch of foods come back, it does not mean you are allergic to those foods and you have to avoid them forever. Once you start to heal and do a bit of gut healing, then you will probably be able to eat most of those foods again with no problem. And if you do have an autoimmune condition, I would highly recommend looking into the autoimmune protocol. And I think personally the best resource for that is Sarah Ballantyne, aka the Paleo Mom. So she has a ton of info and recipes over at her site for you. And I'll link her in the show notes because she's a badass. Okay, next thing that we can do to help heal our leaky gut. Work on the stress in your life. Are you in a job that you dread going to every day, in a stressful relationship, trying to start your own business? You're making your gut more leaky. Oh wait, this kind of sounds like our adrenal fatigue episode from last week, doesn't it? So, if you're beating yourself into the ground with your exercise routine, hit straight in your gut. Exercise creates inflammation too, and as we know from last week, it also creates a spike in cortisol. So, if you already have a lot of inflammation going on, you aren't doing your gut any favors by doing high-intensity exercise. If you're eating oodles of noodles and pizza every day, and then taking Tums or Prilosec to get rid of your heartburn, or taking NSAIDs every time you get a headache or hangover, especially on an empty stomach, your gut is basically crying and yelling at you to stop. Give it a break. Ask your naturopathic doctor about L-glutamine, which is the preferred food of your gut cells, and stock up on high-quality probiotics and probiotic-rich foods like sauerkraut and kombucha to help balance out the good gut bugs and get the bad ones out. Let's take out foods that we know to be inflammatory, like refined sugars, processed foods, sodas, junk foods, standard American diet stuff. Oh, and remember to chew your food if you didn't get that memo already. Okay, but now let's talk about a couple other things that you can do that I freaking love. Let's talk about bone broth, collagen, and gelatin. Bone broth is just the best. It's basically Mother Nature and like 1950s mom. I always think of, what's her name? Betty from Mad Men. Forgive me. I'm only on season 2, so I don't remember all their names yet. But it's your 1950s mom cure-all for a stomach bug, the cold, anything and everything related to your immune system and when you get sick. But why? It's not just an old wives' tale. So there are actually some pretty magical properties of bone broth that either freak you out or gets you super excited to drink every day for weirdos like me. Hey, It's the collagen, glutamine, and gelatin in bone broth that actually gives it these superfood healing properties that you hear about all the time. So these superfoods can also help balance your hormones, improve skin elasticity, wrinkles be gone, and help with arthritis pain by cutting down on inflammation when they are included in your diet. So game plan for anti-inflammatory gut healing. Include bone broth, collagen, or gelatin in your diet every single day in some form. Avoid inflammatory foods like gluten, grains for some people, and dairy if you're lactose intolerant, and other foods that you personally don't tolerate well. Because as we know, I've said this multiple times before, everyone is different and what is inflammatory to you may be different for someone else. Also, add more probiotic foods into your diet. Work on that. Work on your chronic stressors, as we said above. Listen to the adrenal fatigue episode from last week if you missed out on that. And it's also a great idea to get toxic house cleaning products and personal care products out of your life, which can actually seep into your skin transdermally and cause inflammation. And we're going to be doing another episode on that soon. So, what is the deal with collagen, gelatin, and bone broth specifically? Spoiler alert, they're all superfoods that can help leaky gut if you didn't get that by now. And let's talk about why they're so good and how you can use them. So first, let's talk about collagen because everybody and their mom seems to be using collagen now. Don't judge me for this. I was watching Keeping Up with the Kardashians the other day and they were at Whole Foods and they bought Vital Proteins. And I was like, dang, even the Kardashians are using collagen. So you know it must be in popular culture now. So collagen, unlike gelatin, does not gel and it can be used in either hot or cold dishes. So it blends in perfectly and it doesn't taste gritty or have like a weird aftertaste. You know, sometimes when you get protein powder, you have a nasty, gritty aftertaste. Well, it's just so nasty. So collagen you can also use as a protein supplement. Collagen peptides are basically short chain amino acids or proteins that are naturally derived from pasture-raised, grass-fed collagen protein. So collagen peptides contain the same amino acids as gelatin, which are identical to the proteins found in your skin, nails, hair, bones, cartilage, and joints. So really important point here, when you are buying collagen, you want to make sure you get it from a grass-fed, pasture-raised source. I get mine from either Great Lakes or Vital Proteins, and I know Primal Kitchen Foods also makes a really good collagen, but don't just go to the store and buy like any brand that you've never heard of before because you never know what they're putting in that shit. So collagen. You can also stir it into any kind of drink, hot or cold, or mix it into smoothies, soups, sauces, whatever your little heart and gut desires. So as I said, I mostly get mine from Vital Proteins, which makes the grass-fed beef collagen, but they also make a marine collagen if you want them plain. And new in the past couple of months, they have collagen coffee creamers with coconut milk, a like Madagascar vanilla collagen, and even a dark chocolate blackberry collagen, which I use to make my dark chocolate sweet potato brownies. So don't worry, I'll link that in the show notes. And then my other favorite is Primal Kitchen Foods, which makes a collagen that's more in like a protein powder form. So most collagen supplements, when you have them, aside from the like Vital Proteins dark chocolate blackberry one, they're unflavored and it's just kind of white when you open it up inside. But the Primal Kitchen Foods one is more like a protein powder and it actually has like a nice taste. I think they have a vanilla flavor, but I really like the chocolate one. Just, you know, side note here. So other great thing about collagen is, aside from gut health, it's really good for athletes who are training a lot, whether you're pounding the pavement running, lifting heavy weights in the gym, whatever you do, because collagen helps your body produce more creatine, which is an amino acid or a building block of protein that helps boost energy, repair, and rebuild muscle after exercise. If you have weary joints, collagen is also the most highly concentrated form in the body where the joints meet and in the body's connective tissue. So this makes collagen especially important if you're prone to or if you're recovering from injury, so you can have a little extra cushion in your joints to help prevent and heal from injuries or overuse. Okay, now that you know everything about collagen, let's talk about gelatin. So sometimes people are like, gelatin, you mean like jello? Well, yes and no. Yes, in the sense that it makes things gel like Jell-O does, but no in the sense that if you get grass-fed beef gelatin, it has zero added junk, unlike Jell-O, which is a shitstorm of I don't even know what's in there. No artificial colors or sugars, and you're probably not going to be using this gelatin like the Jell-O that we used to make Jell-O shots we did in college. Mom or dad, if you're listening, just pretend you didn't hear that. So back to gelatin, right? It has the same gut healing properties as collagen, but they're just used in recipes in different ways. So if you wanted to make like some gut healing gummies, you would use the gelatin. If you want a gut healing boost to your tea or smoothie, but you don't want it to gel up, then you would use the collagen. Just to recap, if you want more supple skin, stronger nails, shinier hair, plus stronger bones and cartilage for injury recovery, and a stronger gut lining, collagen, broth, and gelatin are what you need. So, as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, I think in the intro, but maybe it was at the beginning. Honestly, this podcast has been so long, I don't even know what's happening anymore. I have a ton of recipes on my site using collagen, gelatin, bone broth, and even bone broth peptides, which sounds weird, but it's dehydrated bone broth in the form of, it kind of looks like a little protein powder. So, for example, if you're making a soup and you don't have any broth on hand, you can put the concentrated broth powder into the soup so it tastes like a broth. And I'll link those in the show notes. You can always just search collagen, gelatin, etc. on the blog. But honestly, for the broth, I usually just have it in soup or as a morning drink on its own. Someone actually asked if you should drink it on an empty stomach or with food for the best gut healing properties. I would guess, though I haven't done any PubMed research on this, that if you have broth on an empty stomach, it would be more easily absorbed and the nutrients in there are more readily available than if you had it with food, which is similar to the mechanism of action, how it works with vitamins. So if you don't like beef or you have a sensitivity to it, you'd probably still be fine with beef broth because it's just the bones, not the proteins and the muscle fibers that you're reacting to. But you could also just do chicken broth, or you could do some kind of like seafood broth. Okay, deep breath, people. That was a lot, I know. Good thing you can listen to this podcast over again if you missed anything or if you're super confused. I'm going to now answer a couple of listener questions about gut health that I might not have covered already, and then I'm going to let you go to let your brain recover a little bit. So, how do you know if your gut needs help? What are some signs to look for? So the biggest clue is your digestion. If your digestion is messed up, whether you tend to constipation or diarrhea, if you experience bloating or heartburn after meals, you probably need some help, as well as the like shitstorm of symptoms that we listed earlier in the podcast. How long does it take to heal? Okay, woof, because this is a loaded question. The thing is, and you're probably going to hate me for this answer because it's the same one I gave last week for adrenal fatigue on the podcast, I can't tell you how long it's going to take for you because it depends where you are in your healing journey, how leaky your gut is, what you've been doing to heal, and honestly, how far you're willing to go to heal it. For example, if you only cut out gluten and do nothing else, it's going to take you a heck of a longer to heal than someone who does a completely anti-inflammatory diet, includes collagen, broth, and gelatin, works on their stress, repopulates their gut microbiome, and does all of the things to heal. I've experienced people healing in as little as 3 months, but for me personally, it took me years to heal mine. So everybody's different. And I know you probably hate that answer, but it's the truth. Now, going off of that, how do you know when you're healed? So when you aren't experiencing that shitstorm of symptoms anymore, you're probably in the healing process. So that's great. If your digestion has significantly improved, that's the first indication that you're going to be doing better. If you did a food sensitivity test before and it came up with a ton of foods that you were sensitive to when you figured out your gut was leaky, and then you take another one a couple of months later and there are only a few foods that shows up, that's definitely showing improvement too. Oh my God, big breath. That's it for today. Take a big breath, process the information, and you will be good, I promise. In other news, in case you missed it on the blog this week, I've got two new recipes for you. a lemon garlic roasted broccoli, which is perfect for all you Whole 30ers or meal preppers out there. And then just yesterday, I posted a paleo dark chocolate bark with pumpkin and flax seeds with a whole post on how to use seed cycling for hormonal health and balance, which is super, super cool. And honestly, that bark, the chocolate bark, kind of reminds me of, do you guys know those, I think they're called bark thins, and they are dark chocolate with either pumpkin seeds or cashews. I think there's one with pretzels, but I cannot eat that one. But they are seriously so addicting. I cannot buy them because I feel like I'm going to eat the entire bag. That is 100% a food with no breaks for me. So the seed cycling for hormonal health and balance is super cool. You should definitely check that out because real food for the win. So go over to realfoodwithdina.com to find those recipes. Come find me and my shenanigans over on Instagram, Facebook at Real Food with Dina. Don't forget to leave a 5-star rating and review on iTunes if you love the podcast. You're the best. Okay, bye. See you next week where we will talk all about food sensitivity testing.